Ray Kingman, who is CEO and founder of Semcasting, which is an innovator in location intelligence for brand marketing. So we talked to Ray from our studio in San Francisco about the trends he's tracking and best practices he's exercising. So here's our discussion with Ray. So Ray, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep. So we have a lot to talk about, including diving a bit deeper onto some of those things I just mentioned. But first, let's start with a quick intro for you and for Semcasting, for those unfamiliar.
As you said, I'm the CEO and founder of Semcasting, which has been around for just over 10 years now. The company began as an offline data provider. We spent a lot of time in the early days leveraging our predictive modeling software to build and compile offline data for marketers and advertisers. Personally, I'm from I have a sort of interesting work profile. I live in both California and Massachusetts. The company's housed in based in Massachusetts, where the development team and most of the staff is, but I personally go back and forth to Monterey, California, which is home.
So let's actually kind of transition over into Semcasting. What was the drivers and the inception of the company?
I think one of the main drivers, Mike, was this idea that as I looked at the ad tech market as it was evolving, from a base of what you would typically call just some endemic publisher ad buys,
yep,
to something that looked more was approaching intent but only lived in a package segment that was really pretty loosely defined, to be generous.
Mm-hmm.
and then to evolve to programmatic, where that's where the intersection for us came about, because when programmatic happened, that meant we were talking about real people. Okay.
Yep.
And we're talking about real people with real profiles based on did they buy their house, how much did they spend for it, did they remodel it, did they buy a new car, did they send their kid to college, did they send their kid to private school, all of the actual what you would call mission critical events in a consumer's life,
mm-hmm,
sort of can be compiled largely from public information.
Yep.
And that information was pulled together. What we set out to do was pull that information together in a manner that was, allowed and provided the consumer with more insight in how to make decisions about those life-changing events, whatever they may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do that based on history, you do that based on big data, you pull that information and say, look, when someone is, when they go to a particular kind of retail store, that usually means that they go to another one of a certain brand, in a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a set of predictive behaviors that could come out of that, but there's also a set of engagement elements through, whether it be mobile or on a network IP, that could all be correlated to a potential advertising appropriate targeting pool.
Hmm.
So at the end of the day, what we were attempting to do, and what Semcasting tries to do, is we try to focus on what we call mission critical data sets. All right. While the rest of the world was coming at this from almost like a DSP, hey, we'll throw me a lot of data and I'll figure out algorithmically how to solve the, reach a bunch of people that might buy your product, we decided to come at it from the other side. We often refer to ourselves almost like direct mail online, because, when we talk about doing pharmaceutical marketing or talk about doing anything in the healthcare insurance or home improvement or finance. We're talking about it driven by actual offline information that we've compiled, and that's our sort of core competency, is we build the data internally, and we don't just, you know, slap it on online through an onboarding process. We typically say, look, we know there's 1.2 million active Medicare supportive doctors, supporting doctors in the United States, and we know who they are by specialty. And we work within the parameters of HIPAA to provide pharmaceutical companies with a way to access them with promotional information.
Yeah. Now, one thing that's very apparent from all of that is that you have a very impressive breadth of data and a variety of data sources,
sure,
which is increasingly becoming important because in the kind of privacy backlash, the privacy sensitivity, sure, you know, of the last few years, there are certain kind of sources of data that are starting to be have higher regulations, in some cases shut off. One example is, you know, Google last week, of course, you probably saw, has sure announced it's shutting off third-party cookies. So one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is, as an analyst in this space, is that I think the winners are going to be those that are, one, creative with get creative with some of these challenges, right? But also those that have just a larger variety of data sources inherently, because that allows you to just kind of cross-reference and just get a more robust and validated data set, but also just because of these some of these headwinds. So how do you see yourself stacking up against those challenges?
Well, there's a couple different processes. You know, I've talked a bit about the data that we build and how we differentiate around the data, but the other thing we did in founding the company was we, at a point around 2015, we made a transition from the offline world to the online world.
Hmm.
But we made a very conscious decision to do that without the application of cookies.
Ah, interesting. So you're already natively ready for that.
We're natively ready for it. We built a thing called Smart Zones, which was essentially the first generation of IP targeting.
Hmm.
And it was based on the knowledge that ISPs, you know, distribute their IP inventory based on certain logistical patterns that can be plotted and can be monitored and measured and updated along the way. A couple things happened along that path was because we were IP, you know, and then all of a sudden the world went smartphone. And now, what is it, 86% of all ad traffic is smartphones?
Yeah.
Or, you know, well, smartphones are useless with cookies, right? So we were in a natively good position to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also built out a huge inventory of a mobile device signals. We process in the neighborhood of 70 million signals every 15 minutes. That's just in the U.S. And we do that through a process of managing it to a latitude and longitude to a publicly available parcel data set. What I mean by that, the parcel, you know, we know about the grid solutions. We were all had experience in the first generation of mobile with that. But what we tried to do is we said, look, you know, people live on property. Properties have lot lines. Lot lines are called parcels, and they're GPS enabled. So we used technology to map to specifically to 200. It's about 226 million parcels in the United States. So we had a pretty contextually appropriate reference point for what kind of signal we were getting and where we were getting it,
mm-hmm,
and we're processing it all the time. All that, you know, 70 million signals every 15 minutes turns into maybe, you know, 3 million people new each day, but over a period of a year, it means, in our particular case, is we're maintaining those signals or that those reference points to devices based on dwell time and our ability to link it to what we call a top home and a top business. And toward that end, while we'll have coverage of over 700 million devices, where we have is a data set of about 370 million devices that are linkable to the offline world in what we would call an active way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, another thing that's kind of under fire, besides cookies, is the app layer kind of GPS permissions that are generally granted at the app layer in platforms like iOS. And yes. In iOS 13, there is now greater transparency in push notifications, as I'm sure you know, acknowledging, telling people that, you know, this app is using your location. And not only that, but a very easy way to downgrade that location tracking to what was in the background. So it sounds like you're also natively primed, natively ready for that transition in terms of your other, you know, collection methodology.
Yeah, if you think about this as fuzzy matching at some point, you know, I think, you know, part of this conversation should be at some point an acknowledgement of what the future looks like.
Yep.
In terms of location tracking. What does 5G mean to all this and to everything else that is being done? Location is going to be a critical component of, you know, if not an inflection point in what 5G is.
Yeah.
You know, one of the patents that we worked on with smart zones is for Internet of Things devices, IoT. Big part of that was, frankly, you know, understanding, you know, mundane things like what do farmers do with their tractors?
Right.
You know, what do MRI machines, how often do they need servicing, and you know, what's the logistics of making that happen? So, you know, if you think about from an ad tech perspective, you know, if the aperture gets wider and the picture gets fuzzier in that process, it's still, I think it's going to be highly driven by a contextual set of reference points. And I think what we need to do as an industry is deal with the fact that those, we have to bring more than one tactic to the ball game here. We've got to be able to bring, you know, hey, I can put you by device in a particular city block, but now, you know, based on retail patterns and behaviors and projections, I can put your household in a place that is aligned with the, you know, aligned with the goals of the campaign.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned 5G. I want to drill down a little bit on that because there's a lot of talk about 5G, obviously. The conversation usually centers around faster speeds, low latency for kind of visually rich media, all that stuff. But one thing that I think isn't talked about as much is the fact that this kind of discussion of location tracking has some interesting implications because the orientation of 5G is, of course, that it is a low-range, high-frequency signal. So therefore, the stations have to be clustered more densely, especially in urban areas, as opposed to what we're used to with, you know, cell towers that are, you know, miles apart. So therefore, the ability to triangulate location probably improves to more levels of precision. But not only that, when we're talking about kind of urban areas, you know, I'm here in San Francisco, you know, GPS tracking is great. But when you're in kind of an urban canyon, the, you know, calculation of the signal getting to the satellite and bouncing back is, you know, offset a bit by bouncing around all these buildings. So that's why, you know, you look down at that little blue dot and you're, you know, a half a block away from where you actually are. So 5G in terms of just that higher level of precision, is that a fair way to look at it?
I think it is, but I think what the future brings is, you know, I think we tend to think of this in sort of architectural terms almost.
Sure.
Where you're thinking about it in, hey, it's a building, it's a satellite, it's a, you know, it's a cell tower. And I think the metaphor changes with 5G. I think, you know, households will be their own station.
Yeah, it's just more pervasive. 5G.
it'd be more pervasive, if not all pervasive.
Yeah.
There'll be layered architectures of, hey, from what you're holding or what you're wearing to your house, to your car, to, you know, it's everything will be connected in that process. We all are, I think, in our industry, in the advertising and marketing industry, I think we're all very sensitive to the issues of privacy.
Sure.
Much more than I would think the public probably gives us credit for.
Sure.
But that said, I think, you know, at some point along the way, as we look at the impact of CCPA and GDPR, so less so, but CCPA for sure, we're overdue for what I would call, you know, what I would say is a fairness doctrine about the whole notion of what is advertising really. If you're approaching this with good faith, for the support of a product and service, how is this any different than direct mail?
Yeah.
And so if your mailbox just happens to have an iPhone 11 handle, you should be able to not pick up your mail. That's obviously that's your choice. But I think one of the challenges on CCPA has been that, you know, it's sort of a it's tough for the industry to react, and it is going to be very expensive for the industry to react, because we've only heard half the story. I mean, and that's probably being generous. We only know about the activist view of the CCPA solution, and we don't really have the other side. And if you look at it from Google and Facebook, they're doing the only thing they can do, which is, you know, turn it into a walled garden. So I don't share anything, man. Maybe that's the remedy we all need to pursue.
Yeah.
Maybe what we all need to do is build our own walled garden and not be passing anything around that looks to be compromising to the consumer.
Yeah.
The other way to approach it is you need some construct in which to react to CCPA. Similar to, and I'll go back to my financial services roots, like managing credit scores.
Hmm.
You need a way to sort of bring that all together in a way that says, look, you have, if you want to use a credit score, you have to have a permissible purpose to use it. So if you want to use this particular location ID for Ray or for Mike, you need a permissible purpose to do that. What our industry has always lacked is any kind of sort of regulatory consequence for not using in good judgment.
That makes sense. Well, this is all fascinating. We're going to pause for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Ray Kingman. Hello, everyone. This is Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Brandify, which is Street Fight's parent company. It's a local marketing company that provides a range of services for brands with brick-and-mortar store locations. So that's everything from retail stores to restaurants and moving companies and banks and healthcare providers and several other verticals. And Brandify manages the digital outposts where most consumers encounter these businesses today. So we're talking Google Maps and Facebook, Yelp, Apple Maps, and Bing. And the name of the game is really to create a compelling presence on these sites and apps and to engage with consumers more effectively using advanced reputation management tools. And this is all really compelled by the fact that 97% of consumers regularly search online for local businesses. So brands today can't afford to be missing from all those channels or lack multimedia content or contact information or visible responses to customer feedback. So Brandify synthesizes and optimizes all these channels through a local marketing platform. And it's all about standing out and winning the loyalty and lifetime value of tech-savvy consumers. So to learn more, visit Brandify.com. So we're back. My guest is Ray Kingman. So Ray, before the break, we were talking about a lot of just great kind of, you know, topics and concepts in the macro environment. Everything from privacy to the kind of private sector technology aspects and dynamics that are really kind of steering a lot of this, and your philosophies on, you know, proper location targeting, proper meaning both responsible but also, you know, technologically adept and strategic. So let's go one level deeper. Your offering, our Semcast offering, is something called Smart Zones. So tell us a little bit about that in terms of what that entails, how it's packaged and priced, and how that kind of comes together and manifests into like something tangible you're providing for your advertising partners.
Sure. So, as I mentioned earlier, Smart Zones has been around since 2015, and we have, you know, multiple patents on it at this point. But one of its, you know, at its core, what Smart Zone is the often talked about topic of identity resolution. That's what it's used for. It's everything that we do in our world is based on the offline data. So when we work with our customers often mostly come, in almost all cases, come to us with their CRM data, their customer lists, or their, in some cases, their website traffic. And what they're looking for is, all right, give me digital IDs for the these CRM records that I want to activate online, or give me access to more people who look like them. As I said earlier, we focus on an issue on with customers on things that what I call vertical solutions. All right. We're organized as a business by vertical. We have individuals who manage healthcare. We have individuals who manage politics. We have individuals who manage home services and travel, tourism, and professional sports. We have someone who manages higher education. So, for example, what I mean by this mission critical is if you look at let's use a fun one. Let's start with professional sports. We work with several NBA franchises, and one of the things we do for them is we have a solution called identifying the unknown fan. What that is we use our location technology and our Smart Zones technology to do run a play that looks like this. We have points of interest for the arena. We know from the signals that we receive from the game. We compare that to the franchise's season ticket holders or other known attendees.
Yeah.
And we do things like identify how far do they come to the game? How often do they come? Where's their home? Is their home representative of someone of affluence? Is it someone who could afford, for example, a season ticket, a corporate sponsorship, or are they a game pack person? Or are they just a merchandise opportunity, or a special fan day kind of target. So there's one example of how we put together our data, which is essentially this umbrella of location information and home information and affluence and we pull it all together to sort of create a solution that we can take to market as a solution. Another one just is, I think, a useful one. And this is something that we're kind of proud of. We won awards for this one. But basically, we have what is called a point-of-care solution for the healthcare industry. Point-of-care is that when you go to the doctor or you go to the dentist and you walk in the office, there's all these little cardboard pop-ups in the office, right? Everybody's seen these things. And these cardboard pop-ups are actually created and managed by organizations, you know, entire organizations who distribute this information for the benefit of pharmaceutical companies or device companies in the doctor's office. Well, what we do is we have created a solution that allows people to, when they walk into the doctor's office, get pinged and say, if you'd like to log on to our Wi-Fi, we have additional information for you that is relevant to your care. And that information, you know, in as part of this, we would like to serve you advertising. Do you accept this or do you not accept this? Now, what that has done is dramatic. It can do is dramatically lower the threshold of overhead related to a pharmaceutical product or a device product, because you're looking at 200% investment in marketing for some of these products.
Mm-hmm.
And so this potentially has the benefit projected out to help overall costs in the long run.
Now, that's interesting. As you describe those two examples in two disparate verticals, it makes sense that you have that vertical delineation in terms of how you work with these companies, because it seems that the strategic execution is going to be vastly different because there are different patterns, different data sets, different frequency of transaction, different price point, different user behavior. So it really makes sense.
Very, very important.
Yeah.
Different regulatory frameworks.
There you go. That too.
All right. So if you look at healthcare, you've got a regulatory framework which is, by comparison to most industries, very mature. All right. You've got HIPAA, which has been in place for 20 years or more. Now, HIPAA really has, puts tight reins on how you communicate and what you can communicate to a consumer, or what the healthcare profession can communicate to anybody else. That said, when you're talking about ad tech, it's always been sort of a, ad tech, healthcare and ad tech's always been a hot potato. You know, nobody wants, it's really been something you want to be guarded or careful about. Well, what we did is we have somebody who runs the healthcare vertical who has experience in that world, and he knows something about regulations. And what we did is we pursued what's called a high trust certification. To high trust is for healthcare and for some parts of finance, which cover HIPAA and things like GLBA and other regulatory requirements. And so when we did this point of care solution, it became a key part of that process to make sure that we were as compliant as possible and made sure that we had the blessing of a regulatory body that, could speak to the issues of healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. You know, you're very well set up in these verticals in terms of the competency you've built around them. Are there any other verticals that you believe kind of map to your assets and competencies that might be underserved? Or if not that, what are you working on now that you're excited about, and what can we expect from Semcasting in 2020?
I think the answer to that is I'll go back to identity resolution, and I sort of roughly outlined a concept of, how does the industry begin to mimic what Google and Facebook have done with the walled gardens. We all in the industry can feel put upon by the fact that they've pulled third-party cookies, or they're not sharing, data feeds, and you can't do attribution except within their walls. But the reality is that, maybe they got it right. Maybe what really makes sense is that you really do as an industry, if consumers really do feel at risk by the behavior of advertisers, then what we need to do is be make sure that we're not adding to that risk by putting any information out into the public domain that could be acted upon by anybody else. Long way around of saying, I think identity resolution means that the universe we're going towards in the future for ad tech is, it's got to do three things. It's got to do high match rate identity resolution of being able to turn digital IDs into people and people into digital IDs, but do it in a an environment that isn't risky. Two, I think marketers, brands want to be able to go take that information and design to their market, to their product, to design solutions, data solutions that are going to more efficiently reach the people they want to reach without having to go, you know, test 10 lists and then throw out 9 and do it again and do it again and do it again. You know, I think we need a more, I'd say, terrestrial-based solution for that. And audience design, I think, makes sense there.
Yep.
And the third thing is you do this all in a closed environment, so you have the ability to do deterministic attribution of whatever you did in step one and step two.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you talk about walled gardens. It's starting to make sense in that when you look at something like CCPA, a lot of the restrictions aren't necessarily around the use of the data, but the sharing and the selling of the data. And when it starts to permeate these walls that are between entities is when you start to see it get away from its original source and then nefarious things happen. So if, you know, it is within a controlled environment or a walled garden, it's all first-party data. So not only is it responsibly used and not leaking out, but it's more quality data because it, by definition, it's more of a first-party source, right?
And to add on to your view, I think it also it essentially allows you to take publicly available third party data and turn it into first party.
Oh yeah, there you go.
So basically, if you're not distributing this, except in a manner that is completely anonymized, then essentially what you're doing is you're working with the asset that you have in the environment, in a closed environment. And, you know, that is one of the reasons we look at it and say, all right, if, you know, we still have to work with DSPs, we have to serve these ads, or run these on a, you know, connected television, or, the way that we do that is we need to start working within the universe of their IDs, not ours.
Hmm.
So if we look at it from the viewpoint of, hey, XYZ DSP gives me a feed, anonymous feed of all the impressions they've served, and I match that to my universe of smart zones of people, places, and points of interest, and then when a brand comes to me and says, hey, I want to reach people who have 3-acre lots and drive riding, you know, are candidates for riding lawnmowers, then I can do that within my closed universe, and that what I hand back to the DSP is their own ID.
Hmm.
So that cuts down on, you know, the chain of custody never gets broken.
Yeah.
And so you end up with that kind of, rather than everybody searching desperate relief for a unified ID. You know, that was popular as recently as a year ago. But I think maybe as an industry, we might have gotten it wrong. We should have gone the other way.
Hmm. I love the analogy of a chain of custody. I'm gonna start calling it that. That's great. Well, so that's all the time we have. That's a good place to end it. I want to thank you, Ray, for spending time with us.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, me as well. This was fun. Thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.